with really crude drawings.
And sometimes hilarious drawings.
Oh, absolutely. There's a great one of a guy sticking a dagger up somebody's nose.
You should definitely post that.
I will scan it in and I'll post it. it is
Future
gold.
Kendrick.
Yeah, Future Kendrick. It's in that book you bought. Are we recording this time?
Remember that time we recorded an entire podcast and then only realized that halfway or
no,
at the very end?
I mean, I should say yes. Is that going to sit like that? Is that... I don't know.
You hear about the gigantic bang in the middle of the podcast?
I don't know. I mean, I didn't look at it.
It's not
we're betraying the fact
fault.
That we were recording two of them. It might have recorded all the way like to the part where it got dumb, and then
maybe
we could just cut it off.
Did you check?
I know I didn't yet.
Oh,
I was busy.
Okay. It's like Kendrick has a job now, some kind of job.
Sometimes thing. I got a jobby job.
A little job.
Sit sock. Everybody spinning in the stream of consciousness with Kendrick and Kyle.
I am Kyle.
And I'm Kendrick.
Just in case you guys didn't know.
Yeah.
I'm the fat one, and Kendrick's the one that wears a hat all the time.
That checks out.
Wait a second. Oh, yeah, that's right. No, right, sorry. I thought I was going to be offended at you calling me the hatless one.
No, you called yourself... I don't like this. I think it's leaning funny. I'll put it on this one.
All right.
There we go. That's because they're not the same width. Like us.
That's true.
We're not the same width. We're slightly different.
Yeah, I'm not sure if I want to live anymore.
Okay.
No, I'm just kidding.
Okay.
I do want to live. I'm excited for...
What prompted that?
I was just trying to think of something that I was like, I'm not sure what to talk about today, but we always say that, and then I was just like, went into a tangent about suicide, which is, welcome to Sit Talk.
Welcome to Sit Talk, everybody. The suicide tangent.
Shouldn't do an entire podcast on suicide, but we're about to. So,
I understand it's painless and brings on many changes.
Not for you.
Well, you know.
I guess you change into a dead person.
Please.
You could take or leave suicide?
It's a song.
I don't believe you. There's nobody who sings about suicide. Should we do a list?
There's a theme from MASH.
No, if we do a list, so I'm worried that if the last podcast didn't get recorded, which you guys will know by now because this podcast will be after the one that may or may not have gotten recorded, the lost podcast, then we would have done two lists in a row.
Is that true?
Because the last one we did with our
right.
special guest, Sean Bean,
fuck.
Was a list.
Right.
Special
right.
guest,
so
Sean Bean.
Let's not do a list.
Okay. You want to do eventing and see what happens?
We
could talk about the Darth Vader globe scene.
I don't know what to say about that.
I just thought it would look very menacing.
Except
so.
Someone put Sauron in there and it worked.
Yeah, it was
just
really
a little
cool.
Bit too well.
I'm not sure what that's supposed to represent, so if you guys have any comments, and Aaron, I'm basically talking to you.
At this point, it's like a month old. So.
Yeah, yeah, but it's iconic. And I bet you there's more memes now than ever before.
I would wager it's gone. It's been forgotten because of some other thing that's come up that's way more important.
Trump doesn't like lettuce on his tacos?
Or like how he's eating a steak again.
Oh my god, is it a Trump
incorrectly.
Steak?
It's probably incorrectly, too.
I just don't... care if he eats steak well done.
I don't care about very much at all.
I already know how I feel about him. His steak doesn't tell me anything new. Right?
Well, by now he will probably have finished his
steak
his world tour.
Oh.
So maybe he'll have started another war.
We can only hope that we already did the post-apocalyptic Trump episode, so.
Yeah, but you know, you talk to some people, you think we're living it.
We're living it.
You're gonna have to go forward.
He's got two really big exhaust pipes, okay?
Yeah, I got that.
You're asking a lot of questions.
What I liked is a guy came in behind me and that light was definitely red.
Yes, super duper red. So, I think today what I want to discuss is something more along the Kendrick side. So a lot of people don't know this. And by a lot of people I mean everyone who doesn't listen to this podcast.
Okay.
So everybody who listens knows this.
I'm a little concerned about where this is going.
Kendrick is involved in
competition drinking.
That's not what we call it. We call it alcoholism.
Yes.
Just because you call it competition drinking does not make it a competition.
Fair.
I was going to say Ren Scott's and more so martial arts and the more so swords.
All right.
And weaponry.
That was a long way to go around to say with I hit people with metal. That's usually
no, but I don't want to talk about how you hit people with metal. I want to talk about your fledgling as in the last 2 years, interest in starting to buy swords for yourself and weaponry and starting to do the real steel stuff from from Thingamajig.
Yeah, that
Arme,
place I go.
Or,
yeah, sure, Arme's good.
What is it called? So Kendrick participates in full steel.
It's a HEMA club.
HEMA. Like, is that because you're hemorrhaging all over the place?
Yeah.
With the steel?
Yeah.
Okay. What's HEMA?
Historical European Martial Arts.
Historical European Mathematical Anti-Telharsic Harfatus Septomen.
Yeah.
Okay. Martial arts.
Yeah.
What is that field? What does it pertain to? Like, what... when you talk about HEMA, what things fall inside of that umbrella?
Well, you know how people do, you know, karate, kung fu, jiu-jitsu, and all those sorts of things that come from Asian...
Yes, yes. I've
Asian
seen kung fu movies.
Asian history. Sure. Things, right? And they have Asian traditions handed out by Asian masters. A lot of them are somewhat unbroken, but sometimes there's manuals or you know, curricula that people have written, right?
Mm-hmm.
The HEMA is the European equivalent, but we don't have an unbroken, like, master-to-student relationship because people stopped doing it a long time ago.
Is that... So it used to be that way, and it's no longer that way?
Yes.
Okay.
Back in the day, there, you know, master trained student became master taught new students, et cetera, et cetera.
I guess what I've seen a lot of Europe, ancient Europe portrayals is like someone training an army or like
some of it, yeah,
that kind of stuff.
A
less
lot
like
of it,
master student.
Well, that usually wasn't quite as elegant, and you see that in Asian depictions too, where they're training the training the army how to hit people with a stick,
yeah.
Right? And this stuff is more like the nobleman or the actual swordsman, the more sophisticated advanced stuff that actually has nuances and it's
you,
people
you
who
just made me think of that duel
whatever.
From Firefly, like,
yeah,
the kind of like
much
yeah.
like that.
Okay,
this guy is an idiot. Look at this idiot over here.
Hey man, we
you're
can't
an
judge
idiot. I can though. He's not
you can't judge.
I just did.
We can't
it
do
turns
it.
Out it was really easy.
You just can't do it.
I just did it.
Anyway, all right, so this is a more European style. It's broken, meaning that it you no longer
it's,
follow the master student like,
well it's broken in that
ritual.
It's an attempt to recreate that original martial art from treatises and body mechanics.
Okay.
So a lot of the there are a lot of the guys in the early days and even now come from Asian martial arts or fencing or other kinds of physical
you
backgrounds.
As well.
Yeah. Come from a physical background that gives you better a little bit more insight into body mechanics because otherwise you're reading between 400 and 1,000 year old books, I guess it's like 800 year old books, some of the oldest ones, with really crude drawings.
And sometimes hilarious drawings.
Oh, absolutely. There's a great one of a guy sticking a dagger up somebody's nose.
You should definitely post that.
I will scan it in and I'll post it. it is
Future
gold.
Kendrick.
Yeah, Future Kendrick. It's in that book you bought. Oh, there was a call-out we did in the last one where I was like, Future Kendrick, don't forget to post, and then immediately went on a tangent, and I could not for the life of me remember what the fuck I was talking about. So there's... I dropped... Future Kendrick didn't drop the ball on that one. It was Present Kendrick not actually
Future
finishing
Kendrick
a sentence. It was amazing.
It's not going to get better, folks.
I looked back and I was like, God, what the fuck was I even... I don't even remember what I was talking about. But anyway, the treatises, the books that these come from, were written by fencing masters, by the guys that trained and were literate of the Renaissance era and post-Renaissance in a couple places. And mostly the Italians and Germans, just because those were the dominant areas that we have found those texts. There's some Spanish stuff from later, but a lot of the longsword style stuff from the 12th to 14th, 15th century.
Mm-hmm.
Well, sorry, 13th to 16th century-ish, especially in the later end of that. Had more of the longsword, like iconic knight shining armor kind
and
of
stuff. And that's not, that is what you're doing.
That is what we're, okay. That is what I do, mostly. And that's where you see a lot of the German and Italian guys. But it's over a stretch of about 100 years that you got these main writers talking about longsword with Fiore and Tollhofer and Lichtenhauer.
For
and
all of the
Meyer.
People who don't know what that is, like, who are those? Those people are just iconic.
Those are the guys who wrote books that
okay.
we found,
okay.
that we still have records of. Fiore was the main Italian guy. Tollhofer and Lichtenhauer, I think it was, are some of the German dudes. Tollhofer and Lichtenhauer had a relationship. I always forget. It's like who came first, Mozart or Beethoven or whatever. And you're like, ah, fuck, I know, but I can't remember because
okay.
I got to think
one,
about it.
One,
it
was one of them.
One like, of them trained the other one.
Okay.
And then like Fiore was around at that time, and he went through what is now Austria and Switzerland, And those guys went through, like, Bavaria and Austria. And so, like, they almost certainly crossed paths.
Hmm. Okay.
And so they almost, they may not have fought each other, but they almost certainly,
was,
they
is
were
there
around.
Any other areas? Like you said Italian and German and Bavarian and Austrian. But what about, like, French or, like, English or, like...
At that, well, there is some English longsword George Silver, I think, wrote, but I think he was a little later period. I think mostly it's that at... I mean, because there's Spanish-style rapier fighting and Southern Italian rapier fighting from later stuff, Bolognese knife fighting, and then there's English historical manuals, and then there's McBain, who was an 18th or 17th or 18th century, I forget, Scottish basket hilt fighter, and he got shot like 7 times, like shot with a musket,
okay,
and he passed out, woke up in a pile of dead bodies, and then, you know, dusted himself off and went about his business. So, like,
how did he survive that?
He was just a motherfucker.
McBain?
His name was McBain.
Of course it is.
Yeah.
Because why the fuck not?
Yeah. So,
because the most intimidating guy is the fucking craziest.
McBain. But yeah, no, like he would routinely like pass out and be thought dead, and then like come to later and then get better.
Dude, awesome. It so sounds no, like there's like amazing stories.
So, but he wrote later, and so it's mostly just a matter of which books survived. Who wrote books? Like, there was almost certainly a French longsword master. I don't know of any of his works. And maybe he did write some. I'm not sure, but I don't know of them. And I don't know of anyone who has heard of them. The main, when it comes to longsword fighting, unarmored and armored, you typically see German and Italian.
Okay.
And German means Meyer, Tollhofer. And sometimes, like, Lichtenhauer.
It's not Lichtenhauer. The Meyer-Briggs test. Right?
I cannot
for
remember.
Sword fighting.
Yeah, there's more J's in. I can't, like, it's not Lichtenhauer, but I can't, from, you know, I'm going to piss me off here. But yeah, there's another guy that, but it's usually Tollhofer and Meyer. I think it was Meyer. And then the Italian is Fiore.
Okay.
Fiore de Liberi.
So those are the three that, like, you basically.
When you talk about Hema and Longsword, those are usually the guys you're talking about.
Okay.
Those are the ones that have the most well fleshed out texts that are as complete as possible. The other one you hear about is one that they don't talk about the author, but it's Sword and Buckler, and it's older. It's either I-33 or 133, which is the name of the, I think that's the name of, like, the find. It was, like, section I, item 33 or something like that. I don't remember, I don't know the details on that one, but I believe that one is the one extant, like, book on how to kill people with a sword and buckler.
Okay.
And that's even harder to read because it's, like, I think it's old German.
So you like study this stuff and go take tests on it, or are you
stuff, different places have different levels of academic involvement. Some places, almost nobody studies the original texts because it's not only written in Italian, but it's written in 16th century Italian.
And turns out it's hard to translate.
It is really hard to translate. A lot of words, like a lot of letters, shifted over the years, and a lot of words changed meanings. And so you need a good translation for almost all that stuff. Even the German stuff. German's changed a lot, which is funny because you wouldn't think German had changed a lot, but it has. It really has over the last 700 years or 500 years in some of the cases. But so you need at least translations into modern Italian or modern German, but most people will read it in the language of their that they're fluent in. And there's a Fiore translation that's very good. And that's most of what we use. And it's very, the other part that's tricky is it's flowery ass language. So they talk about thing, you know, I don't know if it was Meyer, but there's someone else who had, one of the German masters talked about ending him rightly. And you're like, what the fuck does that actually mean? And then that was him throwing a pommel. That was another online guy.
Is he like swinging his right hand or something?
No, like he unscrews the pommel and hucks it at him. And I'm still pretty sure it's a joke, but. There's talks about, like, well, here, Fiore, when he describes the guard positions where you hold the sword to defend yourself and the positions that he names, he talks about them as if he was them. So it says, I am the two-horned guard. I am duplicitous because I can hide the length of the blade here. And you're like, you're a sword now? Like, the fuck are you on, dude?
Yeah.
But that, the Renaissance era of writing, that's just how they wrote. And there's a lot of allegorical references. And
like what?
All of the guards that we use in Italian have goofy-ass names. Because you got long point and short point, and then those are out there. But then there's the guard of the woman, which is where the sword's resting on your shoulder. And it's like, and then there's Bicorno, the two-horn guard, which is where the sword's like up, and it looks kind of like a rhinoceros horn. And then you've got the boar's tooth guard, which the tip is low and off to your
left
side.
Those are ones I've heard of before,
yeah.
Right? Okay.
Yeah.
Maybe not and, all of them, but I've heard of Borstig.
And then, like, when the sword's in low in front of you, instead of, like, Lowgard, which is what the Germans, I think, call a lot of them, Unterguard, but something like that, Unterhau, maybe, they have the middle iron gate. And then when you pull the sword back at a presence, it's the full iron gate, or strong iron gate.
Sweet.
And it's like, guys.
They're serious, man. They want you to...
When you have the blade up high and the guard up high and you're pointing it at the opponent, it's not like, you know, a high guard. It's the window guard.
Oh, I remember that one.
Yeah. Posta finestra.
And so that's stuff you knew before you started doing
HEMA, Some of it, yeah.
Or is HEMA stuff you've been doing?
I technically have been doing HEMA for a long time.
Okay.
We just never called it that. Okay. We were never in a club that did that, and we were doing it more of a stick fighting oriented kind of thing.
Okay.
Which a lot of people frown on, so...
Really?
Yeah, there's some stuff that doesn't translate quite as well.
To stick fighting, or...?
Yeah.
Okay.
And the fact that we were mostly just beating up morons led to a kind of low-level... basically, we could get away with a lot of shit that you shouldn't be able to get away with.
Oh, yeah, because like, you're not using like real steel, and it's like...
Well, we're not fighting people who are
actually
intelligent. Because most of the people we're fighting are just thugs. And a lot of the guys we fought... Because we got so good at fighting just dipshits off the street that come in and give us money, and we beat them. Interesting racket, really. We got fast, and we got good at getting points. And some of us got good in other ways that did that, but overall, there was a general weakness towards very heavy on the point sparring attitude. And about dealing with, you know, what we call the derp shots, people who throw things that martially don't make sense, body mechanically don't make sense, but would count as a scoring point in our system. And this the group I'm with now, is, as I was saying before, the scholarly attitudes, we actually have a book. Where I came from before, it was based on Tollhofer. But I'd never read the book. I didn't even have a copy of the book.
Well, you can learn.
I learned from our instructor, who read the book and interpreted it his way. Danny,
okay.
And he read the thing, looked at the pictures, figured it out, beat some asses with it, called it good. But his interpretations were his own. And that was he made them work, but there's a lot of accepted interpretations and reinterpretations by the community now that explore more of those techniques and how they might actually work differently or... Like, it's not just the canonical way to interpret it, but they've explored some of those things that we may have dismissed as not making sense. And there's some German techniques and some Italian techniques, and we had a kind of mishmash. Well, now I'm focusing very much more on the Italian.
Mm-hmm.
I'm doing some German a little bit on the side now, but a lot of the Italian stuff is much more body mechanically specific because these guys are less of the beating up people on the street and more of, I mean, they call themselves scholars. Like, that's the group. And they talk about, like, understanding the exact body mechanics and performing techniques as precisely as possible because that's the most effective way to beat an ass. So they're not full scholar. Because you go full scholar, you're just a historian who reads about it in books and works in a museum, right?
Don't actually do it, yeah.
And some of our guys actually do work in museums. But then the other side is I just hit people with a stick, you know. And what's interesting is, like, ours there is we let people come in off the street for $2. They put a fencing mask on and then you throw down, right? In this place, you're not even allowed to spar for like minimum 8 to 12 months, and even then, it's not full sparring. It's like higher speed drills that are much more controlled. Full on free sparring. I technically just now gained the right to do that back in April. So I'd been there for about 18 months before I
could. Have you done it yet?
Yeah.
Is it like intense?
It is because there's a guy swinging metal at you.
But you have metal on too, right?
Like, the minimum for sparring with these guys and this isn't full speed. Full speed steel sparring is just not a good idea. I don't endorse it because a lot of the techniques that we use, and there's an armored combat tournament coming up here. Full
are you
armor.
Gonna go to it?
I can't. I have a weekend booking, but it's a double booked weekend.
I would love to go watch that.
Yeah, I can tell you about it. It's public. It's in the Springs. I guess I could plug it. Maybe I'll plug it here. It's the Deed of Arms from Black Falcons down in Colorado Springs.
Okay.
But they're going to throw down, and they can't go full speed because they'll kill each other. Because the whole point of the techniques is how to overcome armor.
Yeah.
So you can't honestly... If you're going at full speed and full power...
it literally is a duel to
You
death.
Will kill somebody, yeah. Even with dull steel. If you're going full speed and full power and you're not killing people, then you're not doing the technique correctly. So you have to compromise somewhere. And for
that
a lot
makes
of the
sense.
Times,
I think I've heard you talk about that before.
Well,
like,
it's
you
different
can't,
attitudes.
Like, it's why stick fighting is really different because...
You can go balls to the wall with stick
but
fighting.
But you can't... You're like... you do differently. You do it differently if you're trying to kill them. You wouldn't really either use a stick or you do something else with the stick.
Well, and a lot of the stuff we do with the stick fighting is applicable if you use your imagination to some extent. But at the same time, you can also beat an ass with a stick. Like, we use bamboo with a shinai, that flex. And it's really hard to genuinely hurt somebody with a shinai unless you thrust, because they don't flex so good in the thrusting.
Yeah.
The harder you hit,
which is what I mean, it's the more like they deform. If you really wanted to hurt somebody with a shinai, you wouldn't do the swing. You wouldn't do as many swing things.
Well, if you wanted to hurt someone with a shinai, I would invert it and hit them with the handle. Right? Because that part's solid.
Yeah.
There's no flex in it. But it really, it's just that's a safer practice tool. If you gave me
a wooden waster, on the technique.
Yeah, right? That's compromising on the tool.
Okay.
Because it changes some of the methodology. It also makes it really hard to tell whether you flatted somebody, because if you hit someone with the flat of a sword, it won't do anything.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And with the shinai, it's hard to do that. It's something we struggle with.
It's hard
a long
to know,
time.
Right?
Yeah. And since we're sparring with people who are all skilled, you have an honor system where you just be like, oh, okay, you grazed me. That cut, my arm wasn't lined up right, my hip wasn't behind it. It's a bullshit cut. Your cut got me. And it's because it's more of an honor. I mean, I hate to throw on honor, but it is more honor, gentleman's honor kind of spar. Where you're more like, ah, no, you got me, I fucked up. But the only gear we fight with when we do that is our padded gambesons, our padded jackets. Fencing masks at a minimum, but I'm still waiting on my order for an actual steel helmet. Big fuck off gauntlets.
They're cool as shit to wear.
Yeah, I actually just repaired my thumb plate. I don't know if you saw that. I'm very proud of it.
I saw the guards.
Those are thumbs.
Oh wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
No, I realized the perspective was off. But so we wear those gauntlets, mask or helmet or something. Gorget, which is a neck protector that prevents, because it's a dull steel sword will still stab you in the neck real good and can absolutely kill you. That's technically the minimum required gear to spar at a reasonable pace, not like throw down crazy, but at a somewhat fast pace. Almost everybody elects to have elbow protection and forearm protection. I actually went cheaper and got plastic, because now that the HEMA is a thing, you can get HEMA specific gear that's modern, but targeting people doing this kind of stuff.
Okay.
So my gauntlets are meant to look somewhat historic, because I just like the metal more than I like the style of the mitten gauntlets that we have. But my elbow pads and my elbow cups and forearm protectors were just plastic in black fabric.
Okay.
And so they're very modern, but I wanted them now. That's the trade-off you usually get, is the metal ones can be so inconsistent in quality because a lot of them are just costume, and you don't know for sure that you're just buying overpriced costume stuff or if you're buying legit fighting stuff. But if you're buying HEMA safety gear, they usually, no one buys it for costume purposes. So it's a little easier to be clear on it. And it's usually in stock.
That
whereas
makes sense.
If you, like, I bought those gauntlets for, I want to say $180. I think it was less than $200, if I remember correctly. And those are the cheapest gauntlets you probably want to ever fight with. Buddy, one of the guys at the school dinner just bought his for $1,200, I think. And they're the mitten kind that come over.
Okay.
So it's like a big, like, lobster claw. And those aren't perfect. So it's kind of expensive. I'm looking at getting into armored stuff pretty soon here. I'll probably start buying a chain mail shirt. Which is technically redundant, I guess, but whatever. That's colloquial. So yeah, that's basically that. And then,
so like, how much further can you go, like, armor-wise before you get to a point where...
So on Tuesdays, we're doing armored fighting right now as people are prepping for the deed, the tournament that I was talking about. And two of the guys there in their full armor are wearing gauntlets, forearm protectors that are connected to elbow cups that are connected to upper arm protectors that are connected to shoulder pauldron things. I'm not using any of the technical terms because I don't care to. That are connected to shoulder pieces that are tied in to his shirt.
Okay.
Underneath it, he's wearing a full padded gambeson that goes down to about his knees. It looks like a night shirt, but it's thick, I think, linen batting or cotton batting, like a shipping blanket, basically. He's wearing a full chainmail shirt that goes all the way down the same as well, drapes to about mid-thigh. So the gauntlets all the way up his arms. A breastplate, a backplate, a big fuck-off helmet, as well as the gorget, and legs. He's got armor greaves.
Wow.
Doesn't have the sabaton. About 20 to 30 minutes, depending on if he's got help. he actually needs help for some of it because you have to tie a thing up here on the shoulder. You
can't do that when one arm is already done.
Yeah. And then the other part is that you can't do it when you have one arm because it clips on, belts on, and then it ties on. And you have to do the tie first, but once you've done it, you don't have enough range of motion in that arm to do it anymore, the other side. So you end up with Bender from Futurama where he puts his arms back on. It doesn't really work so good. But yeah, so and it takes a while to take it on, to put it on, take it off. It is a chore, which is, you know, historical. So you have squires. But yeah, it is fascinating stuff. What was really interesting is we have a game we play, because we like to throw around medicine balls in the other class to train, practice some techniques. But in this class, they do what they call a dexterity drill, and they throw around a wooden dagger trainer, which is just a 18-inch or 20-inch dowel, basically, that's carved into the shape of a dagger, with a round tip on it to minimize it. So you can practice dagger stabs without actually stabbing people. And it's made out of wood, so it's relatively inexpensive and somewhat soft. And we just huck it around in our gear. I don't have the full armor, but I'm wearing as much of the stuff as I can. Mm. And we try to catch it and then throw it with those big cumbersome gauntlets on. So it's
interesting.
It's an interesting game because you'd think, I'm throwing around a stick. This should be easy. Well, should be. But we play pickup stick a lot. But
where you have to, like...
Well, you drop the fucking thing, and then you got to go pick it up. Well, you can't really bend over.
Yeah.
So, it's...
Interesting. So, like, what's your... What do you think, like... What are your favorite parts and least favorite parts?
I as a lifelong martial artist, I'm a big fan of technical techniques and you know, moves, like specific techniques that are elegant. I have a lot of experience with martial arts that I've done that were pointless or frivolous or purely aesthetic. Mm-hmm. But one of the things I like about this is that the aesthetic comes from the fact that it's so effective at killing people. Not that it's intrinsically violent. I mean, that's great, but it's that the shape of a longsword isn't because it's ornate or pretty. The shape of a longsword is because at the time and the technology they had available, that was the most effective way to take a human body, you know, to put in front of a human body a tool that could cut through something in a combat situation. Hmm. Much longer, you switch to greatsword, and you can't really get into a combat. I mean, the dueling situation gets trickier. Too much shorter, and you don't have the range. You can get dominated because other people outrange you. So this size of it and the shape of it is all come out of battle experience and the most effective way to use it. And all the techniques are built off of that as well. We don't just cut like this because that's the way we've always cut, because there's a tradition. There isn't one. The HEMA only goes back 30 years at the top, and it's only been taken off the last 15. So people will have books and things, but there's not enough of the, well, my teacher did it this way and his teacher did it this way, so that's where we'll do it. The only excuse you have is, well, it says that in the book, but you can clearly see here where he's got the wrong, his thumb's on the wrong side of his hand because the artist was drunk or something, so you can't always tell from looking at the picture or trying to understand what the fuck the guy was talking about. And there is a history of fucking with people in some of these books. So,
really?
Yeah, like, there's a couple of techniques sometimes that you see that are almost certainly a joke. And I think that pommel unscrewing is one of them. But they talk about throwing swords.
Like the dagger in the nose isn't one of them?
Oh, I think that was maybe just someone writing something and drawing something they thought, saw that was funny. Because that was never written as a technique. It was just a funny drawing.
Oh, okay.
And the guy looks very displeased about it, the receiver of the stab.
I can imagine.
But I think that my favorite part about it is that it is all applied body mechanics. We move this way because if you move any other way, it's a suboptimal application of force.
Okay. Is there any criticisms or anything like that that you find either frustrating, annoying, or anything like
that? The one thing that is frustrating by the community is that it's almost as bad as the libertarian community in that the greatest enemy of HEMA is also HEMA. So many, there's such a fracture. I mean, there's the community overall, but everybody believes themselves to be better than everybody else. And that's more of a martial arts issue in general, is we're all more similar than we are different, but there's a little bit of hotheadedness and competitiveness in it that tends to make it sometimes a little bit of a dick measuring contest. The group I'm in now is minimal.
I think that's fair with any kind of, like, competitive thing, though.
Yeah.
Like, or anything that has the potential to have a competitive aspect
yes,
to it.
Yes, right? Absolutely. And it's the part that I dislike about all of them. This place I'm in now is much more academic without ever giving up the fact that it's all about murdering people.
See, and this is where we had a discussion a long time ago about, like, I play a lot of deck-building card games, and I find that I like the aspect I like the most is, like, building and seeing how mechanics work together and understanding what my opponent's deciding to do and things like that, right? And a lot of times in those communities as well, I find myself in the situation where I'm like, I don't want to play this guy. He's far too serious. Like, he's literally doing the same thing. He's like, it's dick measuring. It's all about who's the best. It's not about, like, what makes the... It's not about... It's like, there's efficiency, right? Because you're talking about moves that are meant to literally kill people very easily and quickly. Mm-hmm. And then there's also, like, the kind of, like, question of, like, well, why do they do it this way? Or,
right,
what made them choose this, and why is this important? And why have we never, like, done anything different? Or why did we come off of this original thing? I think the academic nature of it is the reason that I find it frustrating that... In the same way, like, it does seem to be dick measuring in a lot of these things that can end up being competitive. And
oh, yeah, a lot
it's,
of...
it's, yeah.
A lot of the stuff...
Good criticism.
I would say that this... HEMA has more in common with the card game stuff you're talking about than the other martial arts that I've done. Because it is more oriented on the combat, you know, the sparring situation. And there is a lot more of the chess game attitude and about building out your tool bag or how many more mixed metaphors you can have. But I think that there's a lot more of that attitude. The major difference that I tend to have is that a little bit of the Mike Tyson, I think it was Mike Tyson, who said everybody has a plan until you get punched in the face.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
And that's something that I feel like in card games, it's easier to keep your cool and maintain a tactical mental game. Because it is somewhat...
Obviously, you've never watched Yu-Gi-Oh!
Right. I forgot Yu-Gi-Oh! Is real. My bad. But, you're not having to shoot from the hip. You have time to think about your moves. You have time to participate in it. So it's more like chess.
Yeah, sure.
Whereas in any kind of sparring thing, especially in HEMA, the whole one of the precepts is if you think you're dead.
If you think,
okay. You're dead.
Yeah.
Because if you're thinking, you're not acting.
Yeah,
you're not acting,
that's
you're
a good,
losing.
That's a good critical comparison.
And it's not bad or good, one way or the other. In fact, it's one of the very frustrating parts about HEMA is a lot of times, but martial arts in general, any kind of sparring context. I've been doing it now for 20-some-odd years, and I've never liked competitive sparring. I'm enjoying more of the sword stuff than I ever did before. I got soured on it, and I just never got the balls up to go back and do it again. With some of the sword stuff, it's simultaneously more painful because you're getting hit with fucking metal, but you also have more gear on, so it's kind of, but more to me is I feel like the stuff that happens is way cooler. I've been in some sparring matches with people from other schools.
In HEMA.
Okay. A school came to visit on a sparring night, and I sparred one of their guys, and he did some stuff that was just fucking cool. He kicked my ass with a couple of moves that were like, I was like, oh man, that was awesome. And I got him with something that was like, oh, man. And this is the reason I liked him, is his response the same way. I got him with something that he wasn't in his art but was in our art.
Mm-hmm.
And he was blown away. He was like, oh, that was so cool. How did you do that? But the problem is, and then the frustrating part is, if you can't keep that clear head and be able to recognize those things, it can get very frustrating very fast. Because you stand there, you know, you go, you're not toe-to-toe. You're outside range. You close range. Up to 6 things probably happen. You didn't really think about it ever. You just did stuff. Stuff happened. You reacted. You did stuff. They did stuff. And then one of you got hit, or you just disengaged because mm-hmm. you don't really want to stay there and hug. Unless you do, in which case you want to finish it. It's all decisive actions. You're always trying to end it. But if you go in there and it's like, if you ever watch cats fight, you know, where they kind of posture and then they just do a whole bunch of shit and then they back out again. Mm-hmm. It's a lot like that. That's about as elegant. But it can be frustrating if you don't know what happened or why.
Okay.
And because a lot of times you can look at it
because it's too fast.
Well, and you have to basically replay it because you're not going to be able to think about it in the moment. You're just doing stuff. And I have a lot of bad habits that I've picked up over the years of other things and things I need to train out that I know I do. Full well, 100%, totally aware, I know I do them. but I can't get myself to stop doing them in a sparring context.
I know it's a lot faster, and it's like all happening in the moment and stuff, but I feel the same type of stuff happen when I play games. It's
and
like,
I think that's the part that's habits, the same. Is you, like, you're like, you're doing this, you're like, I'm fucking, you know, oh, I'm
like,
playing
Lands.
You
have a flow, and you're like, no,
I'm doing
do something,
it.
And you're like, shit, I fucking did
I
it again.
I keep doing
like,
that.
I keep
and
doing
you,
it.
And so I think there is a lot of similarity.
I like the idea of metas, too, because, I mean, a meta in a card game is a little more dynamic than like a century-old sword fighting school teaching things, right? But it's cool to see that.
Well, yeah, the rules don't change a lot.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Right? There's not like new weapons being introduced all the time, or like
not
something.
So much. No.
But to see that, like, there's certain areas that are teaching some different things and like in different combinations, and you go to a different area and see different things is kind of a cool aspect of what you're talking about here with like different schools coming in and.
Yeah.
It makes me, it gets kind of exciting. It'd be cool to watch, I bet.
It is interesting. That's part of the stuff that I think is the fun game, is that, it, like I said, that throwing the different systems at each other to see what happens. Mm-hmm. And it, again, the metas. Because when you're not sparring on the sparring nights, I usually get about 3 matches in, because after that I start to get frustrated. Even if I'm doing well, I get tired, I get frustrated, and I start making mistakes. And I don't, and it's they're not helpful educational mistakes, and they're all, it's dangerous. It starts to get dangerous. I personally know that I have a line where if I get too close to it, I lose control. And that's just me. That's what I don't like to spar too heavily, too intensely. I just can't handle it. I just rage out, and I don't want to get even close to that. So I stop way short of that, right? But the whole premise behind being able to sit there and, you know, watch other people, because when you're not sparring, you're watching. That's where I was going with that. And you're watching how people move. You're seeing the techniques they like to use.
Yeah.
You're seeing the stuff that's working, the stuff that's not working, and being able to take that and be able to, like, well, this guy likes to close the distance. He likes to get in. He's trying to grapple.
It's like, what do I do when that
so
happens?
So I'm not going to let him. Or, right? Okay. Or and this is where it's actually similar to like UFC sometimes, or MMA in general. You know, I talked about George St. Pierre before, where he wasn't as good a grappler as this guy was fighting. So he never let him get close. Just punch him in the face the whole time. Well, this guy from Black Falcons was talking about how he was very insistent on asking me, because he was not quite humble bragging. I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt. He was a nice guy, and if I hadn't, you know, contextually this could have been humble bragging, but he was legitimately asking our sparring rules, because they do vary. And it's you don't want to be that dick who broke the rules because you didn't understand them, right? Mm-hmm. And so he was asking about how we do grappling. And because they spar on more padding. We spar on concrete. They'll go to the grapple, and I think he said they'll go to the ground, and they'll go to like a lethal blow or something. Like they'll pull a dagger and go for something, and they'll stop there. We tend to go for once the takedown is initiated, you know, you got gut, and you stop. Not everyone follows that rule, but it's usually the number one cause of someone screaming hold or stop or something is because someone didn't actually stop when they got gut. Because when your feet are up in the air, you're like, you got gut, stop fighting. You're done. You're done fighting. In fact, that's how someone got hurt moderately, is they fell on their back or something because they did like a weird Ryugoshi hip throw thing and flipped the guy up and was like, don't do that. But so he was asking about this because he says I tend to go to the ground a lot. I like to close distance, you know, that's when I'm a big fan of that. I have a jiu-jitsu history or whatever, and I want to do this. So I don't want to break the rules, so I want to make sure I'm clear. And it's like, okay, well, this is what's going on. I was talking to some of the scholars, yeah, this is what's going on. And he never touched me. I was not about to fucking let him touch me after that conversation. I'm like, no, my grappling blows. I suck at, I mean, I can do hand-to-hand combat, right? I can do lots of body throws, but I'm really bad about mentally changing gears. I'm in a sword fight, I'm going to sword fight. Mm-hmm. And we did no grappling in the other stick fighting stuff because there's no safe way to do that outside without more specific rules. So I'm not good at transitioning. I do not have good clutch there. I can't change gears. So I did not want, no, not at all. Every time he tried to close a distance, I would dodge one way or the other and try to hit him instead, keep him at sword point. And as a result, he never got to do that, which I think wasn't necessarily an advantage to me, except, I mean, it was avoiding a substantial disadvantage. I don't think it made me win the fight, but it was the kind of metagame that kept
me
alive.
Like, yeah, when you know you're going to go play against something or do something, or your opponent is doing something, you can plan against it or play around it, yeah. Yeah. All right, well, we were a little over, but thanks for keeping listening. This was a pretty interesting conversation. And Kendrick, thanks for talking about all this stuff.
I will yammer about that forever.
It's pretty cool stuff, I think. And so if you have any more questions, let us know at ethernet.com. at ethernet@gmail.com, and I'll get Kendrick in touch with you about HEMA and how to, you know, start doing that, anything. And don't forget about the event that's happening. What is it again?
Oh, yeah. The next is the Deed of Arms. I'll have a link for it.
Okay.
Black Falcons.
It probably already happened, though, right?
Well, it's happening in the middle of June on Father's Day weekend.
Okay, so maybe not, but
we might actually be coming up. It's probably this next weekend.
Yeah, okay. But yeah, thanks for listening, everybody, and make sure to check out our sites, and we're going to be doing DCC still, so keep an ear out for that. Caitlin's going to start writing review articles for graphic reviews soon that are focusing on the panelists and artists that are going to DCC, so keep an ear out, and we'll see you next time.
And I'll write articles about DCC.
He will. Kendrick is going to DCC this year. DCC, C, 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 C.